This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 23rd of January 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 23rd of January, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, I'll start with the main headlines this week, which are Estate Fears Gold Rush of Landlords Cashing In, Beals to be sold in December, in deal worth just £1.2 million, and youngsters forced out by rat infestation. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is Estate Fears Gold Rush of Landlords Cashing In. Campaigners demanding tighter planning rules on homes of multiple occupation, HMOs, fear more landlords will take advantage of a delay in changes being implemented. People in Stanmore have been complaining about the number of family homes being converted into flats and bedsits to supply mainly student tenants in their neighbourhood. But civic chiefs threw out plans to bring forward new rules forcing landlords to get planning permission before converting properties into student digs. The estate has been left fractured and unrecognisable by the growing student population, a petitioner said, with tensions rising over noise, litter, fly-tipping and antisocial behaviour. Winchester City Council has now scheduled new rules for 2016 and hopes it will give it greater control over housing in Stanmore. Almost 350 people signed a petition calling for an instant clampdown, warning of a gold rush of investors buying lucrative properties during the 12-month notice period. Scrapping the notice period could open the council to compensation payouts worth hundreds of thousands of pounds, Corporate Director Steve Tilbury told Cabinet last week, adding that it was prudent to plan for the worst-case scenario. Councillor Ian Tate warned that landlords could attempt to cash in on compensation while others living in student streets would struggle to sell their homes. The University of Winchester has taken on record numbers of students over the last 2 years after lifting a cap which convinced councillors it could control the problem without special restrictions. Announcing Lib Dem support for an immediate clampdown, Councillor Therese Evans said, "We have been quite tardy in reacting to a growing problem. The problem is that the balance of the community in Stanmore is completely out of kilter." Campaign leader Amanda Chard said she could not be more disappointed by the decision and claimed it put the estate's future at risk. "For the next 12 months, we've now got the possibility of landlords buying up as many properties as they possibly can get their hands on," she told the Hampshire Chronicle.
The second headline is Beals set to be sold in £1.2 million deal. Shock follows Brooks Centre sell-off plan. Beals department store in Winchester faces an uncertain future in the wake of a takeover which values the entire chain of 29 outlets at just £1.2 million. English Rose, the firm owned by property entrepreneur and UKIP donor Andrew Perloff, has put in the bid for the chain, the flagship of which is based in Bournemouth. The company's board has agreed the offer despite describing it as disappointing and said it could have achieved a better price under other circumstances. The two-storey store in the Brook Centre in Winchester opened in 1991. English Rose's move would return Beale PLC to private hands, though it is not yet known when the takeover will be completed. According to the details of the bid, once completed, the firm hopes to have a strategic review of all stores. At the time of going to press, Chief Executive Michael Hitchcock said he didn't have any specific information about the Winchester store, but the terms of the bid means it could be several weeks until the takeover is completed. Mr. Perloff and his family already control almost 30% of Beale's shares, and his company Panther is landlord to 10 of its 29 stores. Beale's chairman, William Tuffy, said English Rose's proposal offers the certainty of a cash exit for shareholders and improves the medium-term financial security of the Beale's business. despite the significant progress made by the current management team in first stabilising and then greatly improving operating performance, the business continues to face significant challenges and financial constraints. As a result, Beals may be unable to generate sufficient cash flow to meet its financial commitments in the future, he said. English Rose is offering 6 pence a share, around 48% less than last Friday's closing price of 11.5 pence. Mr. Tuffy added that the board had explored all other realistic alternatives to raise more capital, but any of them could be vetoed by Mr. Perloff's shareholding. Chris Turner, Executive Director for Winchester Improvement Business District, said, "We are assuming Beals will continue trading as a key department store in the Brooks. There's no suggestion it will cease trading. It's just a case of current shareholders taking hold of it." Retail experts said Beals, which was founded in Bournemouth in 1881, had been hit by the spending downturn since 2008, the growth of online shopping, and the success of competitors such as John Lewis.
Youngsters forced out by rat infestation. Vulnerable youngsters have been forced out of their sheltered housing for a month due to a rat infestation at Winchester Block. 5 tenants were evacuated from Westgate Place as the stench of dead rodents found in vents coursed through their flats. Among them were 3 women as young as 18 who were put up in Winnell's Premier Inn Hotel for a month while pest controllers cleared the building in Sussex Street. Another woman, 17 weeks pregnant, has also been moved after a rat was seen in her home next door. One neighbour, who asked not to be named, said they had to seal all the vents up because the smell of the dead rats was coming into all the rooms. It absolutely stank. It was disgusting. It took more than a week for the pest control to come, she said, adding staff were hardly ever in to address residents' concerns. Westgate Place, run by not-for-profit A2 Dominion, provides shelter and support for vulnerable people aged 16 to 21, with many residents coming from difficult backgrounds. Pam Vazir, A2 Dominion's Group Director of Supported Housing, apologised for the disruption. She said, "While we arranged for best control to investigate and address the issue, we offered alternative accommodation for the residents in the city and covered the costs of their daily meals, travel and internet usage. We believe the problem may have been linked to nearby drainage systems and have been in close contact with Winchester City Council while they inspect external pipework to prevent further issues. It comes weeks after fears that rats at nearby Winchester Railway Station could pose a health threat to commuters." Resident Raymond Marsh of Courtney Road, speaking last month, said the large vermin were multiplying at an enormous rate. Winchester City Council tackled 656 rat infestations in the year to April 2014, down almost half on the previous year, according to British Pest Control Association figures.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death notices. Then Christian comment, followed by letters, historical items, chronicle comment, Belgarum and Westminster Diary. So we start with the death announcements this week. Bull, Doris Bull, died in Moorside Nursing Home, aged 92. Charman, Robert Leslie Charman, peacefully in hospital, aged 87. Dean, Gordon Dean, known as Dixie, died peacefully on the 13th of January, aged 84. Donaldson, Daphne Donaldson, died unexpectedly on the 15th of January. Ede, Joan Ede, died peacefully in Basingstoke Hospital, aged 82. Gray, Helen Isabel Gray, on the 7th of January after a short illness, aged 90. James, Ronald James, peacefully on the 15th of January, aged 83. Kempson, David Kempson, died peacefully at home, aged 64. Ling, Philip Ling, on the 11th of January at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 81. Pierce, Doris Pierce, former piano teacher, died at Berwick Court, aged 96. Pierce, Francis John on the 8th of January, aged 82. Pike, Barbara Pike, died peacefully at Southampton General Hospital, aged 80. Redway, Jacqueline Redway, on the 16th of January at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 57. Richardson, Andy Richardson, died suddenly at home in Darwin, Australia, aged 49, former resident of Winchester. Snow, Richard Thomas Snow, died peacefully on the 13th of January, aged 98. Truman, Barry Robert Truman, peacefully at home, aged 66. Walker, Emma Victoria Walker, unexpectedly at home, aged 42. And Williams, Christina Williams, peacefully in hospital, aged 87. And now we'll move on to Christian comment, read by Margaret, please.
This week's Christian comment is by Paul Kennedy. Je suis Charlie. We are in the middle of the week of prayer for Christian unity, a valuable time, but also a time that does not go far enough. In some ways, it's a scandal that we still need a Christian Unity Week. In other ways, it's a scandal that this week Christians are not specifically embracing other faiths and all people of goodwill. It's been a disturbing time for people of faith. Yes, we value free speech as a foundational principle of modern open democracy. We do, however, also understand the pain of those who feel that they have been gratuitously insulted for the sake of cheap laughs. How do we ensure that this tension is creative and not destructive? The violent attacks on Charlie Hebdo and the Parisian Jewish supermarket, along with the failed attacks in Belgium, show one sort of unity. A unity that is built upon the abuse, power, and the hatred of anyone who does not conform. This unity is a bastardized version of the Islamic faith that it claims to proclaim, a faith that proclaims God, Allah, as the most merciful, is inherently a faith of peace. The most profound expression of unity based upon love was the young Muslim man working in the Jewish supermarket who, at personal risk, saved Jewish customers by hiding them in the cold storage facilities. The potentially violent lust for certainty and power can infiltrate social structures, especially when religion and national identity collide. Pope Francis, looking back on Christian history, proclaimed, "We have been sinners too." However, there is a biblical tradition that eschews this passion for one correct answer. Our Bible is open to contradiction, and this is what makes it such a rich collection of books. Texts which no editor has sought to unify into one simple account. Is mankind the final pinnacle of God's creation, Genesis 1? Or does God start with the creation of man, Genesis 2? Is the correct response to occupation and deportation to shore up national identity and separation, Ezra and Nehemiah, or to integrate and discover how the nations can bless us, Ruth and Jeremiah? We also have four gospel accounts of Jesus' life, often with their irreconcilable differences. A true unity has to accept that we can be united without being the same. This unity is at the heart of the Christian faith and our common human experience built upon love. Je suis Charlie? Yes, but I also empathise with those who feel pain and insult when what they hold dear is degraded. Paul Kennedy.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor, Nikki.
And this from Jeff Bruti. New committee, a SOP to ally concerns. Sir, in your edition of January the 15th, you report that a new council committee to listen to people's concerns is to be set up in the city. This presumably is a SOP to try to allay the concerns of the people of Winchester who are becoming increasingly suspicious of the council's motives and judgment. Why else would 1,100 plus people attend the protest march against the unpopular decision with respect to Silver Hill? Few of those people who protested had found either the time or the inclination to attend council and committee meetings, but, despite there being no scale models, The exhibition in the Guildhall opened everybody's eyes to the mediocrity of what was being proposed. Then, the following month, it was reported in your paper that Henderson had told the council that the 100 affordable homes promised were to be replaced by retail outlets, offering only £1 million in compensation. This was the last straw and gave impetus to the protests. It's all very well for Councillor Humby to stamp his feet and say, some were only too well aware of what was proposed. They simply didn't agree. It is our right to not necessarily agree with all that the council decide, and it is their duty to listen. The general public only became fully aware in September of what was proposed, and on top of that, Henderson's announcement was in October. The public showed that they certainly did not agree by turning out in large numbers to take part in the march in December. Any effort to better inform the public must be supported, but I predict that the meetings of this committee will be sparsely attended by the public, and the majority of people will not attempt to navigate the council website. Most citizens will obtain their information on local matters via your excellent journal. Geoff Brutey, Manningford Close, Winchester.
Britt Croft says, my A&E experience was very different. Sir, much is being said about the overload experienced by accident and emergency departments at Hampshire hospitals and nationwide, but my recent experience testifies to the marvellous job they're doing at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. When I woke up last Saturday with absolutely no strength in my body, later diagnosed as chest infection and probable heart failure, my husband realised that there was no alternative but to ring 999 for an ambulance. The ambulance was on its way even before the call was finished. The paramedics took over, administered oxygen and other first aid, and within minutes I was in an assessment bay at A&E. I was then moved to the acute medical unit where I was looked after by nurses who, although extremely busy, were still kind, considerate and helpful. I have nothing but praise for the ambulance crew, the consultant and all the medical staff, without whose help I might not be here. Bridcroft, Sleepers Hill, Winchester.
This is a letter from Derek Beck. More questions than answers. Sir, the Silver Hill debate begs more questions than it provides answers. One, do we need more retail outlets in the new development when we now learn that the Brooks is currently half empty and its managers going into administration? Two, who else will pay for quality, durable architecture if we don't like Henderson's clear attempt to only provide what is financially viable? Three, will the 1980s anxiety about the Brooks Foundation's disturbing the water table beneath the cathedral be revived when considering the greater area of the proposed Silver Hill development? Four, who will define affordable housing in a city like Winchester? When a purchaser of so-called affordable property resells, only the market will decide its future value. The only guaranteed affordable housing is council housing, a quaintly historic concept, alas. Five, will we ever return to old-fashioned democracy with integrity? Our councillors treat interested city dwellers with contempt when they take the trouble to attend and voice their views at public meetings. The developer cleverly manipulates his publicity images to confuse public opinion. It will take more than mass marches to address half of these issues. Derek Beck, Fifields Road, Winchester.
Are we becoming obsessed with statistics? Sir, I see that the RHCH is accused of ignoring pleas to declare an emergency in January, Chronicle January 15th. I have had personal experience of being held in RHCH for over 4 hours after being delivered by ambulance, having been examined initially by a locum called as a result of a 111 call, who, after a very thorough examination, sent me to RHCH, where I was not attended to by a doctor for a very long time. My question would be, when did the clock begin to tick? From the 111 call or some other time? Are we becoming obsessed by statistics? Why should it matter if rules are bent, provided patients are swiftly dealt with? As I was from the arrival time of the locum, which was about 2 to 3 hours after the 111 call. Taken literally, the time taken in my case, therefore, should, I believe, be the 2 to 3 hours before I was seen by an excellent GP, not the much longer period I experienced after being moved to the hospital. And that was name and address supplied.
And this from Emmy Bulbeck. Run buses when most needed. Sir, referring to the heading in your report of January the 15th, scrapping late bus leaves village cut off. I don't understand why the late bus must be taken off the timetable. That bus means so much to many people. Buses run every quarter of an hour during the day, and those running around the middle of the day are often empty or have one or two passengers. If the subsidy has been reduced by Hampshire County Council, why not take off one or two of the many daytime buses when they're underused? A half-hourly bus for a few hours in the day wouldn't be that terrible, would it? Emmy Bulbeck, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
From Keith Taylor, bring railways into public ownership. Sir, rail fares have risen again, which in total means a 27% increase since the coalition government came into power in 2010. This makes the UK's privatised system one of the most expensive in the EU. Around £1.2 billion is lost each year as a result of privatisation. This is money that should be reinvested in improving poor services and reducing fares. According to polls, two-thirds of the public support bringing the railways back into public ownership. If politicians made this happen, it would help to restore some faith in politics, as people would feel like they are being listened to. However, the recent decision to reprivatise the East Coast Main Line, a great service which returned £1 billion to the taxpayer, unfortunately shows that none of the traditional main three parties are working for you. If you want to see the railways brought back under public ownership once again, then it's the Green Party who is on your side. In fact, Caroline Lucas MP is already working on it as her railway bill reaches second reading in the House of Commons next week. Keith Taylor, Green MEP for South East England.
Thank you. And if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, don't forget you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we're going to move on to historical items, stepping back in time 200 years.
And this was January the 23rd, 1815. Queen celebrates her 70th year. Her Majesty completed her 70th year on the 19th day of May last, which was celebrated on Wednesday, according to the annual custom. The day was celebrated in a private manner at Windsor. The Queen received congratulations on the return of the day from the royal family. The Duke of York went from London at 11 o'clock for that purpose, where he was met by the Duchess from Oatlands. In the evening, Her Majesty was given a sumptuous dinner at Frogmore to the royal family and a select party of the nobility. And a second item, a meeting of the inhabitants of this city, close and suburbs, was held in the Guildhall on Thursday for the purpose of taking into consideration the causes of the great scarcity of coals at the wharf last year. When it was resolved that a general meeting of the trustees under the several acts for regulating the Itchen navigation should be called to devise the best means to ensure a supply in future. The meeting was numerously and respectably attended.
I have an item from 100 years ago, January 1915, and it's headed Diaries Kept by Wounded Soldier. Company Sergeant Major H.T. Forster of the 1st Royal Berkshire Regiment, whose parents formerly resided at Avenue Road, Winchester, is home, wounded from the front. Sergeant Major Forster kept a diary of his varied experiences from the day he left Aldershot with his company, August the 12th, until he was wounded on October the 25th. It's an extremely interesting record of real happenings and the impressions of a soldier actually in the fighting line. And another item, sir, my fellow officers and I attended divine service recently at a church in the far north, and the national anthem was sung. Instead of the vigorous second verse, O Lord our God, arise, scatter our enemies and make them fall. Confound their politics, frustrate their knavish tricks. On thee our hopes we fix, God save us all. There was a milk and watery substitute, of which all I remember is earth and mirth. Let us abolish this mealy-mouthed sort of thing, particularly in the time of a great war, and stick to the old heroic and robust sentiments of our great national anthem.
50 years ago, January 23rd, 1965. Cinema evacuated while fire fought. The Theatre Royal Cinema in Jury Street, Winchester, was evacuated for 45 minutes on Wednesday evening while a fire was being fought in the manager's flat. The audience was asked to leave after smoke began to filter into the circle. Mr. Robert McIntyre, the manager, went onto the stage after the film had been stopped and spoke to the audience. The alarm was raised shortly before 6 o'clock by Mrs. McIntyre, the manager's wife, who noticed smoke coming from a bedroom of the flat over the theatre bar. Passers-by began to gather round the cinema as smoke billowed from two windows of the flat. Winchester Fire Brigade arrived with two machines. Secondly, the Bishop's Waltham Young Farmers Club were extremely active over the Christmas season and the New Year. Carol singing brought in £37, which was given to the old people of Bishop's Waltham and Le Court, one of the Cheshire homes for handicapped people. The annual ball held at the Guildhall, Winchester, on New Year's Eve was well attended, and some 400 people were present, a profit of £130 being made.
And finally, 25 years ago, January 1990, two items. First, ambulance strike not supported. And it's a letter. Sir, I disagree with your two correspondents who support the ambulance strike. Firstly, the government are right not to duck responsibility to fix wages by handing over to an arbitration board. Secondly, one might think, judging by the protests of NUPI, that the wages of ambulance crews were to be cut instead of their being offered rises of between 9% and 16%. It is time the ambulance service packed up their buckets and braziers and got back to work. And the second item, members of Winchester Photographic Society returned from Portsmouth flushed with success after winning 3 of 5 major prizes in the 20th Southern Photographic Federation annual exhibition. The official opening and prize ceremony was held on Friday at the Mountbatten Gallery, Guildhall Square, Portsmouth. Mrs. Anne Ruffell, President of Winchester, was presented with the trophy for the best slide panel by the Lord Mayor of Portsmouth, Councillor Gladys Howard. And now we move on to Chronicle editorial comment. Nikki, please.
Time to plug this planning loophole. Homeowners in Stanmore are right to be disappointed after the City Council decided not to bring forward plans which would impose strict rules on landlords dividing up family homes into flats and bedsits. Campaigners on the estate are demanding tighter control on homes of multiple occupation, HMOs, saying their community has become fractured and unrecognisable by students moving into the area. The new rules would force landlords to get planning permission before converting properties into student and other accommodation. Almost 350 people signed a petition calling for an instant clampdown, but now fear investors might take advantage of the hiatus, leading to a gold rush of landlords buying up properties before the new rules are implemented in 2016. What is at stake in Stanmore is a community with an imbalance of residents, which is out of kilter to what people living there have been accustomed to. Change inevitably happens, and there is a thriving rental market, not just for students, driven by sky-high house prices and stricter mortgage rules. But the City Council, in delaying these new measures, has missed a golden opportunity to plug a planning loophole, and in so doing, let down a community.
And now we have some items from Belgara, Richard.
In fact, three items, the first of which concerns Wolf Hall on the telly. City landmarks have starring role in TV drama. Eagle-eyed TV viewers will be spotting Winchester scenes on primetime TV. Wolf Hall, based on the Hilary Mantel bestseller about Henry VIII and his advisor Thomas Cromwell, was partly shot in the Great Hall, the Cathedral, and at the Hospital of St. Cross. Its filming is another success for Film Hampshire, which brought in over £8.5 million of production in 2014. Last year, 11 feature films and 5 high-profile TV productions were shot in the county, starring A-list celebrities such as Tom Cruise, Kiefer Sutherland, Kevin Costner, Scarlett Johansson, Dame Judi Dench and Benedict Cumberbatch. Filmed in Hampshire, amongst others, were Mission Impossible 5, Pride and Prejudice, Criminal, The Hollow Crown, Wars of the Roses and Downton Abbey. And my next Belgarum item reads, Reporter had inquest nailed. It may have been raining cats and dogs over the past week, but nothing could prepare Belgarum for a very strange experience whilst covering an inquest. There was a rat-a-tat-tat from the ceiling above the council chamber in the castle and a few suspicious rustles. Belgarum began furiously scribbling into a notebook when a nail fell from the ceiling grate and landed just centimetres away. Apparently builders were sweeping the floor in preparation for refurbishments and there was a hole in the grate. Proceedings were halted whilst the runaway was swiftly disposed of. Belgarum knows that journalists aren't always warmly welcomed, but perhaps this was a step too far. And finally, a picture of the Brooks Centre, with inset a picture of Darth Vader, making the comparison between Darth Vader's helmet and the shape of the Brooks Centre roof. The Brooks, a modern classic. The 1980s have been branded as the decade that style forgot. Mullet hairstyles, mini metros, the music of Duran Duran and its architecture have all fallen out of fashion. The Brooks Centre in Winchester is a classic of the genre labelled postmodernism, which was a mishmash of influences. This style is deeply out of fashion, but the wheel will turn and perhaps in 10 or 20 years it will again be the epitome of style, like Victorian architecture, which in the 1960s had the label monstrosity applied to it. So will the Brooks be listed by then and given protection? Or will Silver Hill developers Henderson's have bought it and knocked it down? Belgarum's favourite bit of the Brooks is the centre's hipped gable roof on the corner of St George's Street and Upper Brook Street. From certain angles, the building bears a vague similarity to the evil Darth Vader from Star Wars. Belgarum hopes to feature more parts of the shopping centre and their possible inspirations in future issues.
Thank you. Now we move on to Westminster Diary, Margaret.
Which is contributed this week by George Hollingberry, the MP for the Meon Valley. Supermarkets shouldn't stockpile land for years. There is a high housing crisis here in Hampshire that makes for very difficult decisions on where we build new homes. So news that supermarkets presently plan to build on only about 6% of the land they own, land that could be used for housing, makes me think that we should be doing more to make supermarkets use it or sell it on to someone else who will. Apparently, there are nearly 1,000 acres of shop floor space owned by the Big Four supermarkets not yet developed in the UK, and that equates to around 13,000 houses across the country. But that's just shop floor space. The figures from property agent CBRE did not calculate the entire development footprint, which would include car parks, for example, so the land area being held back is much bigger still. Now, supermarkets are currently perfectly entitled to buy land and keep it for as long as they wish. And if this country was awash with land suitable for development, then that would be just fine. But it most certainly isn't. And much of the land owned by these supermarkets would be very suitable places to build some of the 230,000 homes this country needs built per year. In Bishop's Waltham, Sainsbury's has, since 2011, had consent to build a supermarket on land that previously had permission for house building. So far, it has not laid a brick, and may not do so as long as supermarkets' well-documented drop-in sales forces them to review their businesses. This means that prime house-building land lies undeveloped in my constituency, and that is very frustrating. So what can we do? Some might say legislation is needed to compel supermarkets to relinquish the land and sell if they don't want to develop, but I don't agree with that. First, I don't understand how any law would go about proving that a company didn't want to develop a site. If you ask me, that just seems like a recipe for filling lawyers' pockets with money. Second, this is a market economy, and I think such a move would be an unwarranted interference by government in private rights. That said, developable land is a public asset of sorts, and perhaps the best way forward is to say that planning permission may not be renewed if it hasn't been used within the initial five-year term that all grants of permission run for. It's clear there are no easy answers to the housing crisis or how to free up land owned by supermarkets, but I believe it's something that people should be seriously looking at.
Thank you. Now we move on to this week's announcements. We start with What's On. There's a couple of concerts. Tuesday the 27th of January in Winchester Cathedral at 7 p.m. There's a concert of Space for Peace, which is local, national, community and school choirs performing in various different parts of the cathedral. It's a free concert with a retiring to collection to defray costs. And on Saturday the 31st of January in Harvey Hall, which is at St Swithin's School, at 7:30 p.m, Winchester City Festival Choir are performing Rutter's Gloria, Williams' Tsunami Requiem and music by Briggs and Miller. Tickets for the can be obtained from the Theatre Royal box office, and that's on 01962 840 440. At the Chesil Theatre from the 24th to the 31st of January is a performance of Barefoot in the Park. And for tickets for the Chesil Theatre, 07527 471539. That's 07527 471539. And finally, there's a talk on at the Discovery Centre on Monday the 26th of January at 7:45 p.m. It's entitled The Portus Project, and that's a lecture by Dr. Graham Earle on the archaeological excavations of Rome's ancient port. And that's at the Discovery Centre, 7:45, Monday the 26th, and it's free. No cost at all to you. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 23rd of January at 7:55 a.m. and begins at 4:40 p.m. On Wednesday the 28th of January, it ends at 7:48 a.m. and begins at 4:48 p.m. Now, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we're going to continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
Amputee lives life as fully as possible. A heroic ex-army medic who lost his legs while serving in Afghanistan is to talk about his route back from a hospital bed to triathlons at Winchester's Discovery Centre next month. Sergeant Simon Harmer stepped on an improvised explosive device, IED, while patrolling with the Coldstream Guards metres from their base on October the 26th, 2009. He sustained life-threatening injuries to his legs and right arm just 3 months after his marriage to wife Marisa. Doctors feared Simon might not survive, but after emergency surgery at Camp Bastion, he was transferred back to Selly Oak Hospital, Birmingham. Initially on the critical list, within a week the 38-year-old was able to give his friends a thumbs up and tell them, "I'm still the same old Si, just a little shorter and a little lighter." Despite 5 years of operations and rehabilitation, he's never lost his resilience or his sense of humour. He now not only walks with his prosthetic legs, but takes part in marathons and triathlons. Military personnel who step on an IED often sustain groin injuries, which prevent them from going on to have children. The couple, who live in Coldon Common, are therefore thankful that they now have a daughter, Sophia, 3, and a son, Leo, 2. Simon served as a volunteer Help for Heroes ambassador for several years, helping to raise awareness of the service's charity. Now he's formed his own public speaking company called Blown Away and tours Britain and Europe telling his inspirational story. He will speak at Winchester's Discovery Centre on February the 27th. "My presentation is quite funny. It's not a sob story," he said. "It's about playing the hand you've been dealt and making it a flush rather than folding. When I was hit, I accepted the fact that my legs were gone. All I was worried about was whether I would be able to have children. So many people have helped me. At Camp Bastion, I had to have 35 units of blood. That's 35 people I'll never meet who saved my life. Now I want to live my life fully as possible, as a thank you to them. I feel as though I've been given a second chance." Blown Away From Trauma to Triumph will be at the Discovery Centre in Winchester's Jewellery Street on February the 27th at 8 p.m. Tickets cost £8 or £6 if booked online. And there are three wonderful photographs. One of Sergeant Harmer preparing his kit prior to deploying in Afghanistan in full desert camouflage. Very deep, dark brown eyes. Nice smile. And Simon Harmer after he had cycled 3,000 miles in just over 7 days in the race across America, 2012. All in his cycling kit with a Union Jack on the front and obviously one of those bikes where you pedal with the handles on the front. And a charming picture of Simon and Marisa on their wedding day, and this time in his dark blue uniform of his Coldstream Guards with the white belt and confetti and flowers and smiles all around.
Desperate wards call on non-medical staff. Desperate managers have resorted to asking non-medical staff to volunteer on the wards to help ease the pressure at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Bosses have asked workers from the human resources and IT departments to step into the breach and help on the front line at the Winchester Hospital. They've been asked to answer phones, collect results, assist staff dealing with patients, and even help feed the sick who've been admitted to the Romsey Road site. The emergency measures can be revealed after the Chronicle told how the hospital is facing an AE crisis as it deals with a surge in patients. As reported last week, an 82-year-old woman who had suffered a heart attack was left waiting on a trolley for 12 hours before she was examined as she lay at the side of a corridor. A spokesman for Unison said the extreme measures highlighted the immense pressures NHS staff were facing. He said, "Obviously there are health and safety implications, patient safety implications, in that staff are not trained for these duties, are being asked to assist, and from our members' point of view, there could be serious implications if anything were to go wrong. We're still trying to find out whether the HR and IT departments are subject to Criminal Records Bureau checks, but this obviously highlights the immense pressure and strain NHS workers are facing. As reported, virtually all non-emergency operations have been postponed at the hospital, excluding those for battling cancer who require surgery and emergency cases. Despite repeated requests, Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust has not said how many people have been affected or how many operations have not gone ahead. The Trust also chose not to comment on the plans implemented around staff in the IT and HR departments being asked to volunteer on the wards. In Southampton, hospital bosses are also struggling with the numbers of patients being admitted, with Southampton General Hospital now on red alert as it battles the winter crisis. They too have taken the decision to postpone some non-urgent surgery until the pressure eases. This week, a whistle-blowing member of staff from Winchester said the crisis in A&E could have been averted if the hospital employed agency staff. Steve Bryan, Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP, said, "We know A&E is under enormous pressure right now, and although the reasons are definitely not the same in every part of the country, Winchester is obviously not immune." County Councillor Martin Todd, who sits on the County Council Health and Adult Social Services Select Committee, said he would publicly raise the issues, including the recording of arrival times for the four-hour targets. The next meeting of the committee is on January the 27th.
Campaigners set to take fight to Whitehall. Concerns over River Park centre management. Campaigners battling civic chiefs over the running of a Winchester leisure centre are poised to complain direct to Whitehall. Rosemary Burns and Martin Wilson allege the City Council has wasted taxpayers' money and not properly overseen the running of the city's River Park leisure centre. They are unhappy that the City Council has not put the managing of the RPL RPLC out to tender since 1992. DC Leisure, now known as People for Places, has run it ever since. Complaints have been made to auditors and the Freedom of Information Commissioner, who is investigating the complaint. Ms. Burns told the Council's Overview and Scrutiny Committee that if no external review is carried out, then they will refer the matter to the Secretary of State, asking for the best value inspection under the new Audit and Accountability Act 2014. Councillor Simon Cook, who in the 1980s was the Council's Chief Leisure Officer that ran the RPLC, said he disagreed with Ms. Burns and Mr. Wilson. He said, "Running the RPLC used to cost the Council a hell of a lot of money. That is the reason we let it out to tender. DC have done a pretty good job to reduce it to a nil cost to us. Martin Wilson and others have a theory that the Council has been seen off in some way. I didn't like the idea of privatising the leisure centres, but DC have got a good reputation nationally. The RPLC used to cost the Council a lot of money per year to manage." The committee agreed to invite DC Leisure to a future committee to discuss the contract. A confidential council paper reported the gross annual revenue generated by RPLC. Mr. Wilson asked for the numbers, but the council has refused, citing commercial confidentiality.
Builder fined for dumping caravans. A fly tipper has been thumped with a four-figure bill after being convicted of dumping five caravans in a country lane near Winchester. Trevor Davis, 65, a builder from Islington, North London, was found guilty on five charges of fly-tipping when he appeared at Fareham Magistrates Court. He was fined £200 per caravan and required to pay a victim surcharge of £20 and costs of £2,500, a total of £3,520. The prosecution was done by Winchester's City Council's Neighbourhood Services team, working with Hampshire Police's Country Watch team. This successful prosecution was down to the vigilance of a local gamekeeper and farmer and a joint investigation by Andy Murphy at Winchester City Council and PC Lynn Owen from the Country Watch team. They identified Davis, who had used the caravans as temporary accommodation for his workforce whilst renovating a manor house in Kilmersdon. City Councillor Mike Southgate, portfolio holder for Communities and Transport, said, "I'm really pleased with the outcome as this sends out a warning to those who blight the landscape with fly-tipping. Offenders found guilty will be fined as well as ending up with a criminal record." Excuse me. And there's a picture of one of the dumped caravans.
Parish comes together as vicar retires. Villagers near Alsford are coming together following the retirement of their vicar. The Reverend Royston Such has stepped down from St Peter's Church in Ropley some 20 years after the parish was split, following his divorce and marriage to his curate, Tana Riviere. The rift never healed, and some parishioners have held monthly alternative services in the village hall, attracting national headlines. Now both groups are joining to worship at the village hall following the fire last June that severely damaged St Peter's. The alternative services have now ceased. Norman Day, one of the church wardens at St Peter's, said, "We feel this is a positive step for building a strong church community in the village. People talk about rebuilding the church. Actually, the church is still here. The church is the people." Rodney Skinner of Town Close Ropley, who left St Peter's following Mr Such's remarriage, said, "We all want to put the past behind us now and get on with things. I think reconciliation has started already." Mr Such was unavailable for comment. The part-time priest, the Reverend Stephen Wilson, will be working until Easter in the benefice that covers Bishop Sutton, Ropley and West Tisted.
A developer hopes for April Silver Hill start. The transformation of Winchester City Centre will begin in 3 months if the Silver Hill scheme survives a looming High Court battle, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. Diggers will move in this April if Winchester City Council wins a judicial review of its decision to allow controversial changes to the landmark development. It comes as a senior manager at developer Henderson revealed the firm will flatten the Brook Centre and build new streets if it buys the struggling complex from administrators. Work on Silver Hill will begin in April with 10 flats to be built on the site of the old Friars Gate medical practice, which moved to Wick in 2011. Development Director Martin Perry said Henderson will build the homes as quickly as possible, alongside demolition and archaeological work, and plans to have them on the market in January 2016. The remaining blocks of shops, homes and parking will be built throughout the next 2 years and early 2017, with new homes going up for sale as each section is finished and all but a few shops opening in April 2017. A new doctor's surgery will open on the corner of Friars Gate and Upper Brook Street in the same month, replacing St Clement's Surgery in Tanner Street. The £165 million project is set to be completed in Easter 2018 with the opening of the final retail block in Silver Hill itself. Henderson is also considering a bid for the Brooks Centre, the indoor shopping complex, which will soon be up for sale after its owners went into administration. Managers are monitoring the situation with accountants KPMG and could move for the centre, which neighbours large swathes of the Silver Hill site. Mr Perry said Henderson would bulldoze the Brooks and build new shopping streets, warning that bringing ultra-cheap traders to the centre could dent the quality of Silver Hill. "My real worry is that somebody will buy the Brooks to take it down market," he told the Chronicle. "It will affect the retailers that you can get into the scheme. The Brooks desperately needs sorting out. The Brooks, by its very design, is fundamentally flawed. You can't refurbish or manipulate that. Winchester should be a town of streets and squares and wandering around. It's not a town of covered shopping centres." He acknowledged that the public would probably not want Henderson to buy the centre after criticism of Silver Hill. He said, "The town is in much better hands with an organisation that's thinking far more about the future than is thinking about an immediate profit. But taking on more when there is already a concern amongst people that we're doing too much harm is something that we don't have want, that we'd have to think about. We don't want to appear megalomaniacs."
There's none so big as this, say firefighters. Hampshire's firefighters have created the world's largest naan bread, and it's been rubber stamped as the Guinness World Record. The gigantic naan, which was consumed by punters at the Eastleigh Mellor Festival, weighed 26 kilos and was measured at 4.79 metres long. But firefighters didn't do it alone, as they had help from chefs at the Sanja restaurant in Shirley and the Badi Murchie restaurant in Eastleigh. The massive naan also raised several hundred pounds for three causes: the firefighters' charity, the Water Wells Project, and the Hampshire Hurricanes Rugby Club. The aptly named Dave Curry, who is Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service's chief officer, was one of the main organisers of the world record. He said, "We're absolutely thrilled to officially be confirmed as world record holders for the largest naan bread by Guinness." And there is a photograph of the aptly named Dave Curry with the enormous naan bread and a few of the fire crew, and definitely a couple of the chefs from the Sanja and Badi Murchie restaurants.
Another piece here about the NHS, which is obviously a big issue at the moment. It's a special report looking at the complex problems. Diagnosing the problems in the NHS, it's headed. "Everyone agrees many accident and emergency units at the NHS hospitals are in crisis. The evidence is clear from Chronicle reports. Patients waiting in draughty corridors, an 82-year-old woman having to lift her top in semi-public to be examined, managers pleading for volunteers from non-medical departments to help feed the sick on the wards, and non-urgent operations postponed. There's much less agreement on what has caused the problems that have resulted in units across the country missing targets of treating 95% of admissions within 4 hours. Nationally, the most recent figure was 89.8%. At the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, the figure is only 81.1%. At Southampton General, it's 79.5%, and in Portsmouth, 77.6%. The cause of the surge in demand depends on who you speak to. All are agreed the problems are complex. The population is getting older, and the elderly obviously need hospitals more. The GP out-of-hours service has failed to inspire trust, with younger people more likely to go to their nearest A&E than wait. Increased drinking is seeing more people attending as a consequence of alcohol. But health professionals are pointing to a deeper issue within the NHS. Dr. Chris Rosevere, consultant in acute medicine at Southampton General Hospital, writes a blog on the recent pressures and points to the chronic issue of delayed discharges, better known as bed blocking. It's been a problem for 20 years, but is now compounding the crisis. Nationally, the latest figures show that on average, more than 4,000 hospital beds a day were occupied by patients whose discharge was delayed, the highest point this year and worse than at any point last winter. Dr. Rosevere said, "Hospitals are under huge pressure at the moment due to a surge of admissions, particularly relating to respiratory illness. It's a common problem at this time of year. However, this year's pressure has been compounded by bed capacity issues across the UK. Recent reductions in social services funding has led to delays in establishing home care for patients who require this prior to discharge. As a result, the number of patients whose discharge is delayed has risen dramatically, which means that beds are not available for patients when they need to be moved out of the emergency department. This needs to be tackled urgently." County Councillor Martin Todd, who sits on Hampshire Health and Adult Social Services Select Committee, agrees that delayed discharges creates a blockage which is affecting the whole hospital. "NHS healthcare is supposed to be ring-fenced from cuts, but adult social care is not. If the County Council cuts back on community spending, it creates effects in other parts of the system," he said. But Councillor Todd also said local NHS management was to blame in not planning for the increased pressure on A&E in Winchester. At the RHCH, a whistleblower has told how problems have worsened since 2012 when the Winchester and Eastleigh Healthcare Trust merged with North Hampshire Hospital in Basingstoke to form the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. "Most of the managers who manage in Winchester are based in Basingstoke. They're never normally in Winchester. Post-merger, it is very target-driven, very finance-driven. We know savings have to be made, but it should not be at the expense of patients' care." The whistleblower said hiring agency staff since Christmas would have made a huge difference in A&E. "There's been a ban on any agency staff, regardless of whether wards have safe staffing or not. If we are short-staffed, we just have to deal with it." Steve Bryan, Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP, disputes that Winchester's problems stem from the merger. "No, I don't think this has anything to do with the organisation. The A&E problems we are experiencing are nationwide in England right now." Despite requests, managers at the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust have not commented on the latest issues, including the volunteer appeal, postponed operations, or the hiring of agency staff.
Extra care housing scheme build could start next June. Construction of controversial homes for the elderly on a Winchester car park could start next June. The City Council applied last November for planning permission for a 52-unit extra care scheme for older people on the Chesil Street surface car park. The car park is popular with users, but the council says the Chesil Street multi-storey next door has enough spare spaces if the open-air one closes. A report to council last week said the scheme is due for completion in January 2017. A target date for a decision by the planning committee is February the 13th. Meanwhile, other housing schemes are due to start. March 2015 for Westman Road, Victoria House and Springvale. Building at the new Queen's Head in Stanmore should finish in November. Planning permission for housing in Mitford Road, Alsford and Hillier Way, Abbots Barton is due next April.
Smiles all round as charity gets boost. It was smiles all round when a Winchester dental insurance company handed over a cheque for needy children. The NSPCC Family Smiles Service Centre in Southampton was handed £3,200 by dental payment plan specialist Denplan at a special ceremony on Tuesday. Community funds from the firm will help children and young people whose parents suffer from mental health problems. The SMILES service, which stands for Simplifying Mental Illness Plus Life Enhancement Skills, is aimed at helping the children aged 8 to 14. Gemma Graves, NSPCC Community Fundraising Manager for Hampshire, said Denplan's generous donation will help children and their families smile again. It will enable the practitioners at our Southampton Service Centre to reach out even more local families and provide the support they so desperately need. It will improve children's self-esteem and knowledge about mental illness, and they will feel less isolated. Parents will have a better understanding of how their mental illness affects their parenting, and their relationships with their child will improve. The money will also be used to give parents one-to-one support to come up with a plan to ensure their child's safety should they fall ill. Sharon Ellis, Denplan's Head of Human Resources and Community Fund Chairman, said, "We're delighted to have the opportunity to support such a worthwhile local resource. Mental illness can affect many families in different ways, and we recognise the importance of having specialist support available, such as the NSPCC Family Smile Service." And there's a lovely photograph of all the people from Denplan with posters, with pictures of teeth, with thumbs up, with the various numbers, the pound, the three, the two, 00, and then a smiling tooth at the end of it. Well done, Denplan.
Village actors set sail for Pantoland. This piece comes with a photograph of a smiling cast. The pantomime season might be over, but these villagers are all adrift and looking forward to putting on a show. Following the success of Cinderella last year, performers in Crawley have been warming up their vocal cords for the all-singing, all-dancing Robinson Crusoe. Some 40 locals, including children as young as 2, have been cast this year, and due to high demand, another date has been added. Joy Baker of the organising committee said, "We've got people who were in it last year, new faces, and people are acting for the first time." Sally Wood, landlady of the Fox and Hounds, has written and is directing the show, which Joy says makes the script personal to Crawley. Local business Home Lodge Buildings has created a purpose-built stage to fit in the village hall, and estate agents Knight Frank, have sponsored the pantomime. Robinson Crusoe is at Crawley Village Hall from February the 6th to the 8th.
We should be saying, "Oh no, they haven't." Oh yes, they have.
Crime falling amid cuts to police force. Crime continues to fall in the Winchester district, according to the latest figures. Violent crime in the city centre fell from 143 in 2012-13 to 124 in 2013-14, a fall of 13%. Domestic incidents and crimes across the district dropped from 991 to 919 over the same time, 7% down. The falls come amid police belt tightening in the face of cuts and preparing the most radical changes in local policing in decades. The City Council Overview and Scrutiny Committee heard from Chief Inspector Darius Hematapur. He said the North Walls Police Station would close this spring, with CID detectives moving to Basingstoke and response officers relocating to the fire station in Winnall. Neighbourhood police will move to Mottisfont Court on the Upper High Street. The former County Council building will become an operational HQ at Christmas, housing more than 300 staff, a police spokesman told the Hampshire Chronicle. In Winchester District, the number of police constables was dropping by 3, but 4 police and community support officers were replacing them. Overall, the district will share 13 constables. Across Hampshire, 500 police officers were going through natural wastage by the end of 2016. Councillor Linda Gemmell said people in the rural areas where some crimes were up were worried about the lack of police cover after midnight. The committee heard that street pastors continue to be very successful. In the 3 months from July 1st to September the 30th, they gave out 90 flip-flops, 98 drinks of water, 119 hot chocolate soups, 1,296 lollies, 9 space blankets, 18 care support cards, and 4 items of faith-based literature, 143 contacts were made with the homeless. The key to the success was more flexible working between all the agencies, such as police, fire service and local government.
Paul's Twisted Tipple is voted into top 20 gins. A Winchester gin product has come in the top 20 of a national survey. Twisted Nose, produced by Paul Bowler in Windle, came 17th in a recent poll following a successful new Ginvent calendar enjoyed by adults across the country during the festive period. Using hashtag FabGinUK, people were able to vote for their favourite tipple, and the winner was announced on January the 9th. Warner Edwards Harrington Dry, produced in Northampton, was named as the winner of more than 100 gin brands, including Hendrick's and Tanqueray. And there's a photograph of Paul Bowler at his cubicle, where he produces gin at Alligator Business Centre, Winchester.
Election won't change lot of rural folk, says survey. People in the UK have little faith in Westminster to deliver positive change for people living in rural communities, reveals a YouGov survey. Only one in 25 people believes this year's general election will have a positive impact on rural communities, the poll found. Nearly 70% of the public do not think that politicians care about affordable housing in rural areas, according to the survey. The poll was commissioned by the Campaign to Protect Rural England. Just 4% of people think the forthcoming general election on May the 7th will have a positive effect on people living in rural communities. Almost half of the 2,110 respondents thought that the election would have no impact. The survey also reinforced suggestions that there is a dearth of affordable rural homes, with 59% of rural respondents stating there was a lack of them in the countryside.
Tribute to composer, 70. One of Winchester's oldest choirs is set to celebrate the birthday of a renowned composer at its annual concert. The theme of Winchester City Festival Choir's performance is 70 in honour of John Ratter, who was honoured by the Queen in 2007 with a CBE for his services to music. The 70-strong choir will perform his work Gloria, which has delighted audiences around the world with its exuberant choral writing, accompanied by organ, brass, octet and percussion. Mr. Ratter has a number of royal commissions under his belt, as had Paul Mealer, another contemporary composer whose work will be featuring the concert. His Ubi Caritas was performed at Prince William and Kate Middleton's wedding. A dramatic piece which tells the story of the devastation of the Asian tsunami will also feature in the programme. Chris Williams' Tsunami Requiem received a standing ovation at the Royal Festival Hall in 2008. The adult choir will sing the contrasting moods of the piece, followed by a lullaby, which will be sung by the junior choir from the Romsey School. The 70 theme is completed by the children's choir singing two short pieces by Carl Jenkins, another 70-year-old composer. The festival brass ensemble will perform a Japanese folk song, Homobi Nuata, by John Iverson, followed by the choir's fourth and final song, O Lord, Support Us, by David Briggs. Tickets cost £14, or half price for students, for the performance on January the 31st at 7:30pm at Harvey Hall in St Swithin's School. Book online at wcfchoir.org or buy on the door.
It's the long goodbye for popular Terry. He may have said goodbye twice already, but friends of retiring postmaster Terry Dunn were determined to wish him well again with a surprise send-off. Mr. Dunn retired in December after 5 years at Sparshope Village Shop and Post Office, having stepped in when the shop was taken over by the community following the former owner's retirement. Earlier this month, villagers held a party to say thank you and presented the 72-year-old with a bench for his garden, champagne, vouchers and a signed 2-foot by 3-foot card. It was absolutely amazing. I'm quite happy to be retiring because I knew it was coming and I've wanted to do it for about 18 months. It's my third time. I'm well practiced in the art of saying goodbye. Mr. Dunn retired as a mechanical engineer in 1997 and again 12 years later in 2009. Victoria Williams, who worked with Mr. Dunn, said he will be missed. It's a great loss for the shop and post office, she said. Mr. Dan said he will still help as a volunteer when the shop needs it and also wants to create a new booklet for visitors about walks in the village. And there's a photograph, Cheers, it's headed. Friends say goodbye to Terry on his retirement, and there are many of them, and he will be missed.
It's time for wildlife lovers to join in the big count this weekend. Wildlife lovers across Hampshire are being asked to get counting. It's that time of year again when the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds launches the Big Garden Bird Watch. Last year, the Wildlife Survey attracted more than 15,000 people in the county to take part. It was created 36 years ago in a bid to keep track of how garden birds fare during the winter, but for the second year running, participants are asked to keep track of other wildlife animals as well. Now the charity is asking people to draw up their tallies once again and keep their eyes peeled this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, January the 24th and 25th. Grey squirrels were the most popular animal spotted in Hampshire last year, along with frogs, badgers and hedgehogs. Almost 500,000 people in the UK took part last year, and 82% of people revealed they spotted grey squirrels in their gardens at least once a month. Deer were fairly popular in the countryside locations like the New Forest last year as well, with 18% of Hampshire watchers recording a sighting. But the RSPB are urging people to look out for animals like starlings, butterflies and ladybirds after last year's drop in results for the species. Daniel Hayhoe, the RSPB conservation scientist, said, "This massive survey shows how important our gardens are for the amazing variety of wildlife living there. The State of Nature report showed that we need more information across many species groups, so widening the Big Garden Birdwatch's scope to include other animals makes perfect sense. This is the start of something big and something very, very important. In a few years' time, we'll be able to compare how the distribution of garden wildlife may have changed. Hopefully more people will help to give nature a home in their gardens and outside spaces, meaning we see improvements rather than decline."
Crumbling artwork to be replaced. Controversial plans to replace crumbling artwork at an historic Winchester campus have been approved by city planners. A quirky mosaic outside Winchester College Art School is set to be replaced with a modern aluminium design. The insecure tiles put students at risk, and repairs have cost the college tens of thousands of pounds, Winchester City Council's planning committee heard last Thursday. Arthur Morgan, the college's former art director, was one of five objectors. He said the significance of original architect Edward Cullinan's design would be destroyed, and the cheap-looking replacement would weaken the school's heritage. Alison Davidson, the council's head of historic environment, said college bosses didn't want to make a poor mimic and would rather do something modern.
Residents encouraged to get recycling. Winchester residents are being urged to cut down on waste from the Christmas period and boost recycling. Winchester City Council has asked households to use the start of the new year to rid themselves of glass bottles and jars at bottle banks left over from the festive season, as well as their Christmas tree. The banks also accept clothing, giving people a chance to donate any unwanted, ill-fitting jumpers or superfluous socks. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for the environment, health and well-being, is encouraging everyone to take part. This year, the City Council will be delivering a programme of events as part of its Great Waste Initiative, and the new year is the ideal opportunity to get off to a perfect start, she said. I hope everyone will take this opportunity to make sure that they recycle or reuse as much as possible and remind themselves which items we collect for recycling. And there's a photograph of Councillor Victoria Weston and Councillor Jan Morrick outside a large blue recycling bin.
School will parade its banner with pride. Pupils at a Hampshire school are over the moon with their new banner. As part of Wickham Church of England Primary School's Young Arts programme, children were given the challenge to design and make their own school banner to be used for Easter, harvest, Christmas and end-of-year services. The youngsters drew up ideas incorporating the school badge, colours and values before the final design was approved by the school's council. Headteacher Maria Ackland said she was delighted with the finished product, which was sponsored by the Meon Valley branch of the National Association of Decorative and Fine Arts Societies. She said, "Our children are absolutely over the moon with the design of our new school, church school banner, as it uses all their ideas. We process proudly through Wickham Village each time we visit our church for services, and our banner takes pride of place at the head of our procession. We're delighted that every child has helped to create this wonderful new banner, which we will carry with pride." And there's a photograph of a group of six children with a very colourful banner indeed, and a lot of proud-looking staff standing behind.
Ex-student returns full of inspiration. Rob shares ambition to illustrate for children. A former student has returned to Eastleigh College to inspire others on how to progress in an art career. Rob Gray, who studied there from 2006 to 2009, is now undertaking a master's degree in illustration and was invited back as part of the Visiting Artists Programme. He spoke to the School of Visual Arts and Media pupils about his ambition to become a commercial illustrator for children's books. After the talk, a pre-degree foundation diploma in art, design and media student, Christopher Cheer, said she was inspired. "It was interesting to see how his work has developed over the years and how he has progressed from Eastleigh to studying illustration at master's level," she said. After his time at Eastleigh College, Mr. Gray went to Cardiff School of Art and Design and then worked freelance in Winchester before moving to London last September to study visual arts illustration at Camberwell College of Arts. He said, "Hopefully, my own personal progression route taught today has allowed the students to see what is achievable. They should make the most of all the opportunities available at the college and experiment as much as possible with different art mediums. This will help them with compiling a comprehensive portfolio to show at university interviews." Course manager Dr. Sebastian Hegarty said, "It's always rewarding to be able to invite back a few more former students who are progressing well with their studies and furthering their careers, and Rob is no exception. We have an ambitious group of students at present, and I am expecting to continue our 100% success rate in applications to university this year." And there's a picture of Rob at the college instructing one of the students.
Spirits high as WI passes the baton. Spirits were high as part of a national centenary celebration swept through Winchester. Women across the country have been carrying the Women's Institute centenary baton, and the local ladies were determined to do their bit. Over the past week, it has been passed to groups including Alsford, Bishop's Waltham, Winchester, Sparsholt, Mitchell Dever, the Worthies, Littleton and Hairstock, South Wanston, River Park, Oliver's Battery, Twyford and Hyde. The Winchester leg started last Thursday with a celebration in Alsford. Branch Chairman Jill Graham Moore carried the baton from Basingstoke in a 1979 AA van and was greeted with cheers and applause. Around 60 women turned up to mark the milestone and were treated to a performance from a cappella, a choir made up of Perrin's schoolgirls, before handing the baton to the Bishop's Waltham branch, dressed as hippies. The celebrations continued into Winchester city centre on Friday with a torch-lit procession by the Twyford branch down the High Street, where they met the Winchester group at the Guildhall. The baton was passed over and the Mayor, Councillor Eileen Berry, was there to greet them. On Saturday, women took a King Alfred bus to Sparsholt, where the baton travelled to Littleton and Hairstock, the Worthies, South Wanston and Mitchell Dever. It was then given to the North Downs group, who travelled in a vintage fire engine. Winchester Group Secretary Pauline Virgo said the atmosphere at the Mitchell Dever coffee morning last Saturday was electric and the organisation continues to inspire women. Organiser of the Alsford event, Erica Sisk, said, "It's great fun. The WI is a wonderful voluntary organisation which helps to bring people together socially. It's marvellous." The WI started in 1915 to encourage women to grow and preserve food. The centenary baton relay started on January the 1st in Anglesey in Wales, where it was founded, and will finish on June the 4th at the Royal Albert Hall, And there's lots of photographs of Deborah Barnes and Natalie Ings and Christine Thorne of the Twyford Group receiving the baton from Hamble Valley Group's Anne Joy Coombs, Jenny Leaves, Diana Sneesham and Thema Miller. And another one of the Twyford WI at the Torchlit Procession in Winchester, and the baton reaching Alsford Recreation Centre being transported by two AA vans, including a 35-year-old Ford Escort. And the last one is of the Winchester Group, all standing under the King Alfred statue with the sun going down behind them.
John gearing up for Antarctic expedition. A father of two who has battled life-changing depression is starting a new journey which he hopes will raise up to £50,000 for the charity he's starting. John Dennis from Bishop's Waltham is training for a solo expedition to Antarctica, something he's already spent nearly a year preparing for. The expedition and charity share a name, Dare to Express, and the goal to help people rebuild their lives after mental illness. The original plan was to take the trek last December, but that was pushed back after problems with funding. However, local support keeps flooding in, and Mr. Dennis, who recently turned 40, says he's overwhelmed at people's reactions. It's been unbelievable. It really blew me away and humbled me, because I didn't know I had that support locally, he said. He's talking about a quiz which will be held in February. The 250 tickets sold out in 48 hours, and demand is so high, Mr. Dennis plans to host another two fundraisers throughout the year, leading up to the expedition this December. On January the 30th, he's travelling to Norway for 2 weeks to learn about personal safety on ice and how to layer up for the cold. He'll return there for a month on March the 21st for a full-scale expedition, 2 weeks of which will be alone in preparation for the December trip. And the article comes with photographs of Mr. Dennis in training and a very, very cold-looking Antarctic scene.
Charity shops boost after makeover. Naomi House has received more than £60,000 from a group of Surrey-based volunteers. The Camberley-based Southern Counties team of Red Row Homes chose the Sutton Scotney-based Children's Hospice as part of its year-long charity challenge to mark the company's 40th anniversary celebrations. Together they raised £61,692.50 by taking part in a whole host of daredevil stunts, as well as giving the charity's Easy shop a makeover, which included a visit from TV's Nick Knowles. The group also abseiled down Portsmouth Spinnaker Tower, cycled 13 hours between Red Row developments, and took part in the Great South Run. Their efforts earned Red Row the Outstanding Corporate Supporter Award at the Naomi House Corporate Charity Awards. Paul Morgan, head of fundraising at Naomi House, said, "Naomi House relies heavily on donations from companies like Red Row, and we're extremely grateful for their support. The donation will help us to care for children and young people with life-limiting conditions, but it doesn't end there. Following the makeover by Red Row staff, we've seen an increase in turnover at our Eastleigh charity shop. It's a gift that keeps on giving, making Red Row worthy recipients of Outstanding Corporate Supporter Award." John Allen, Managing Director for Red Row Homes, Southern Counties, said, "Naomi House provides a much-needed service for the local community. The whole team really got into the spirit of it, with many members of staff lending a hand with the shop makeover." And there's a picture of Nick Knowles with some of the Red Row Homes staff, and there are two looking, I don't quite know what they are, but they look as if they could be teddy bears, doing some sawing and doing the charity shop makeover.
Brewery's expansion plans anger residents. Proposals for new two-storey building unveiled. Plans to build a new brewery near Bishop's Waltham have angered residents who are concerned it will cause traffic problems and take up green space. At a public consultation last week, Upham Brewery bosses displayed plans for a new two-storey building which will allow for the company's expansion plans. The firm, which at present employs five full-time members of staff, is currently based in farm buildings, the junction of Stakes Lane and Cross Lane. Plans to move across the field to Winchester Road, with access from Ashton Lane, means the company can still access the area's water. something they say is imperative to the unique taste of their products. But locals said they're worried the new site will cause problems on an already busy road, decrease house prices, and potentially give developers a green light to build on the rest of Greenfield. There will be an economic impact on anyone who has bought a house in the area too. It's a factory, one that makes beer, but a factory with all the smells that go with it. The planning consultant, John White, said another consultation will be held for Bishop's Waltham residents in the coming week. He said the business is expanding and the present premises don't allow for expansion. One of the critical elements is the water. They have already got a borehole and were going to drill a new one. Moving closer to the road will improve access and build a bespoke building which will be environmentally friendly, including solar panels and its own water supply to make it self-sufficient building. The head brewer, James Stevenson, said the new building will allow the company to expand up to 5 times its current rate of output. Upham Brewery currently produces around 5,000 hectare litres, approximately 12,000 casks per year. Once the team is fully moved and the machinery is up and operational, Upham will be able to produce around 25,000 hectare litres, or 60,000 casks per year. If planning permission is granted, Mr. Stevenson hopes they will begin to move into the site as early as autumn. It will be an organic growth of volume, he said. We need to get an efficiency of scale before we can make any plans in terms of bottling. But the idea is to grow around fivefold over a period of 3 to 5 years. A second consultation will be held for Bishop's Waltham residents on Thursday, February the 5th at the Jubilee Hall from 6:45 to 8:15 p.m.
Don't miss your chance to nominate a sports hero. There's still time to nominate for the 2015 Hampshire and Isle of Wight Sports Awards, and local people are being urged to nominate unsung heroes and sporting talent to win one of 18 different awards. The awards publicly reward and recognise commitment, performance and excellence across all sports. The wide range of categories ensures that recognition is given to elite performers, as well as to teams, clubs and stalwarts of the local sporting community. The coaches, officials and volunteers who work tirelessly behind the scenes to help athletes and clubs succeed. In addition, the London 2012 Legacy Award will be given to an individual or school that has used the government primary premium funding for schools in an innovative and inspirational way to initiate long-term changes in their school for physical education and sport. Special guest at this year's award ceremony is Claire Purdy, England women's rugby prop and World Cup winner. Purdy has now retired from international rugby but continues to play for Wasps ladies. The annual event is a joint venture between Hampshire County Council, Sport Hampshire and Isle of Wight and the local sports councils and forums in Hampshire. Nominations are free and close on Friday, January the 30th.
Secretary retires after 25 years. A school secretary said goodbye to Winchester's children for the last time as she retired from her post of 25 years. Angela Carter celebrated her last day at Winnall Primary School at the end of the winter term with a small tea party organised by staff and governors. Past and present colleagues wished her well with a short presentation and a slice of cake. Head teacher John James and Governor Chris Pimes, a former Winnall teacher, also taught Miss Carter, paid a special tribute to her work. Miss Carter said she now has plans to spend more time with her husband Ray and travel in their touring caravan and see more of her grandchildren.
Care homes raise thousands for charity. Two Winchester care homes have together raised more than £3,000 for charity in the past year. Residents of Abbots Barton and St Catherine's View have held fetes, coffee mornings, dinners and raffles, as well as a string of sponsored events. Dementia Specialist Home, St Catherine's View in Stanmore Lane, collected nearly £1,200, most of which has been donated to the nearby Carroll Centre, which works with vulnerable local families. The other causes to benefit were sports relief, Macmillan Cancer Support and Children in Need. Abbots Barton Home in Worthery Road raised more than £1,800 for Parkinson's UK, the British Legion Poppy Appeal and Children in Need. Activities manager Karen Burden said, "It's entirely up to our residents which charities we support. Team members like to take part in sponsored events, such as walks and bike rides, and we enable our residents to contribute directly. And there's a lovely photograph of Jewel Heller Dixon, head of the Carroll Centre, welcoming a visit from residents and team members at Colton Care's St Catherine's View Care Home. With her are Nina Bradley, Chloe Hickman, Jemmy Miller, Carol Lue, Ian Gregory and Margaret Talbot Weiss.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Richard Martin.
Goodbye.
And Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.